Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for July 20th, 2010. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Mike Feinzelber about signaling events in neuron regeneration. Some, but not all, neurons are capable of regenerating or repairing themselves after injury. When a cell is injured, it first has to sense the injury and then relay that message of damage to the cell body. In the case of neurons, this could be a daunting task, because neurons have long cellular processes that may extend far from the cell body. So when an injury occurs, that damage signal may have to be communicated over a great distance to the cell body so that the cell can activate transcription of genes that encode the proteins that are required to repair the cell. To discuss his group's recent work on how injury signals are relayed in neurons, Mike Feinzelber joined me on the phone from the Weizmann Institute for Science. When a neuron is injured, it switches from regular growth into repair mode. What's the difference between these two states besides just the act of repairing the damage to the cell?
Well, when a neuron is injured, in most cases, what's injured is the axonal extension, which is a very long extension from the cell body to the target cells. And in an adult human being in the peripheral nervous system, this extension can be up to a meter long, at least if you're a basketball player in the NBA. So the cell, in order to regrow that axonal extension, really needs to move from a mode where it's putting out very short sprouts to sense its environment to a very long-range mode of growth, and therefore its entire metabolism has to change to that end.
As you mentioned, these axons can be very long, up to a meter in really tall people. And so you're interested in this problem of how that message gets relayed from the site of injury down the length of that axon, however long it may be, to the cell body, which directs the repairs. How did you go about identifying the proteins that are required for transmitting that injury signal from the site of injury to the cell body?
Okay, so proteins that need to move over long distances in cells move basically in complexes which are carried by a motor protein, which you could think of as a small train engine running along tracks, which are the cytoskeletal tracks in the cell. And what we basically do is we latch onto the nerve at a certain point and make a constriction, a ligation. We basically tie a knot on the nerve and basically create a traffic jam at that point where material which is being moved on these intracellular highways builds up. And after a certain time, you can come back to that nerve and collect the material that's built up at that point and then analyze it to see which proteins have accumulated there from all of these motor proteins that are dragging along, bringing them to that point, and start asking what are the differences between the proteins in that preparation versus a control preparation which had not been injured. This was a large collaborative effort of a number of groups, not just ours, and to do this kind of work, to actually analyze complicated protein mixtures from nerve cells, you need very high-resolution mass spectrometry expertise. And this was from my colleague Al Burlingame at UCSF. To do the gene regulation studies, I needed cutting-edge microarrays, and that was the lab of Dan Geschwind at UCLA. And then to put it all together and make some sense of all of this mountain of data, you need very good computational expertise and ways to work out these networks, and for that we were helped a lot by Tsachi Pilpel's group in our institute. Quite apart from the nuts and bolts of the system, which is nervous system analysis and neuroscience work, which is where we come in.
So how many distinct proteins did you identify as being important for relaying the injury signal?
Okay, so what happened was that we were not expecting to get very many proteins when we did this analysis. And when we had actually completed this experiment that I described, and we came up with a good few hundred proteins that were being modified by phosphorylation and being trafficked retrogradely back towards the nucleus and the nerve. And then in order to figure out which of these might actually be important for mediating the injury response, we took that data set and cross-referenced it to another data set of the gene regulation going on in the nuclei of the injured neurons at that time point. So basically, by looking at the signals that were moving and looking at the response that was occurring to those signals and finding out who is talking to whom, we could sort of sift through all of these molecules and come up with the subset that appear to be talking to each other. And even that subset comes up to be a few dozen molecules.
What types of molecules were in that group?
So there are two major categories. In the signaling proteins, we have a lot of kinases, which are those that can do the business of most of the signaling in the cell. And then in the responding side, we have a lot of transcription factors that appear to control the gene regulation response. We chose to focus our efforts at validation on the signaling side in this study. And to do that, we got hold of a number of inhibitors of specific kinases that were in this set and carried out experiments to inhibit them in a neuron injury model to see if that would affect the regenerative response.
And so if you knocked out the activity of these proteins, then did that impair the regenerative response?
So we tested a small number, and for certain ones, we got some attenuation of the regenerative response, yes, indeed. But we did not find anything that would really completely knock out the response by removing one signaling protein from the mix. And you would not expect that, seeing the number of proteins that are involved.
The system has some built-in redundancy.
Yes, exactly. There are a lot of signals running along in parallel, so if you knock one of them out, somebody else is going to get through.
So then did you go about addressing the combinatorial activity of these proteins?
Yes, and that was the real surprise, because when we tried to use two or three drugs to knock out combinations of these molecules, expecting to get a more marked response, what actually happened in some cases was that we got a lesser response. So you pile on more drug and you expect to get a stronger effect, and what actually happens is you get a weaker effect. And the cell seems to manage to regenerate better despite your best efforts to block the signals coming through.
Why would interfering with combinations of proteins somehow have less of an effect on injury response than interfering with them individually?
Well, probably what this tells us, and this is a hypothesis at this point, is that these proteins affect each other in unknown ways, and we don't know all the connections between them. So if one signaling protein can affect another signaling protein and activate a third one in ways that we don't know, if we take out certain portions of those networks, then there will be other pathways activated that will compensate in ways that we have not actually seen. So effectively, if you block traffic on a highway and the drivers on that highway know the local alleys so they can get around the obstruction, they will manage to get through despite your best efforts. And that's probably what's happening here.
Do these results suggest that effective potential strategies for stimulating neuron repair in the clinic might be more or less complicated than we anticipated?
Well, they're very likely going to be more complicated because it's going to be very difficult, I think, at least based on these data, to find a single magic molecule that one could activate or perturb and see some significant functional response. And when you need to manipulate a number of pathways in parallel, and interfering with two at once will cause unknown effects on a third, then it means that devising such a combined therapy is going to be more complicated than people had hoped or thought. On the other hand, knowing the main players will at least allow us to address the issues of devising such a combinatorial therapy in hopefully in a rational manner, but it will require an enormous amount of additional work.
Thank you, Dr. Feinzelber.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That was Mike Feinzelber, corresponding author of a research article published in the July 13th issue of Science Signaling. That article is by Mike Kalevsky and colleagues, and it's titled Signaling to Transcription Networks in the Neuronal Retrograde Injury Response. Another research article in our July 13th issue also addresses regeneration, but this time in the context of an organ rather than in a single cell. Wakabayashi and colleagues investigated the role of Notch signaling in liver regeneration, and that paper is titled Regulation of Notch 1 Signaling by NRF2, Implications for Tissue Regeneration. And that wraps up the Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.